Danny, we only have a minute, but you write about United's algorithm program saying, quote, called Alert. The algorithmic system was created years earlier to identify patients at risk of suicide or substance abuse. The company redeployed it to identify therapy overuse. Can you elaborate on this as we wrap up?
Yeah, so we spoke with hundreds of providers, as I mentioned, and many of them told us about this mystery. They were getting flagged by the insurance company for these aggressive reviews where they would be questioned about the medical necessity of their therapy for their patients, and potentially that therapy could be cut off. What we found out was actually the company had been investigated in three different states and by the Department of Labor for these practices, and they were told that it was illegal and they had to stop it in these jurisdictions. However, the way that our regulation of health insurance works in this country is that it really depends on the jurisdiction in which these actions take place. So even though United Healthcare was told that it was doing something illegal in three different states, it could actually continue to operate with this strategy in other states unless those states took the enforcement. And so what we found is that the company, in effect, rebranded this system, and they're using similar practices around the country to essentially question and potentially cut off care.
Annie Waldman, there's so much to cover here. We're going to link to your reports. Annie's speaking to us from New Orleans in Louisiana. She's a reporter at ProPublica covering healthcare. We'll link to your articles. United Health is strategically limiting access to critical treatment for kids with autism, as well as how United Health's playbook for limiting mental health coverage puts countless Americans' treatment at risk. That does it for our show. Happy birthday, Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman, sitting right next to Juan Gonzalez here in New York.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
We know a KBOO community membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community media by making a donation during KBOO's Catalog of Connections campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000 goal will go towards everyone's favorite music, news, and public affairs programming all year long. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you and happy holidays.
Hey, everybody. Tune in Saturday, December 21st at 5 o'clock for Blues Junction. We're spreading some holiday cheer with singer-songwriter Mark Lemhouse. He's a blues man, and he's got some new music coming out here. I've invited him to come out and do a live performance and interview, and who knows, maybe he'll squeeze in a holiday tune. So again, that's Mark Lemhouse, Saturday, December 21st. You're invited.
Winter's now fading, and I won't have to stay.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. There won't be a regular episode of the KBOO Evening News tonight. Instead, we present a special rebroadcast of our episode of Running on Air with Portland Mayor-elect Keith Wilson. This is when he was only a candidate. This episode was recorded live at the KBOO studio on September 27th, 2024. Enjoy this special rebroadcast.
Good evening. You're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Lanita Duke from Grassroots News. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. We're so fortunate in this episode, we're talking to a candidate for mayor, Keith Wilson. Welcome to Running on Air. You're running for mayor. And I must say, I'm very impressed with your website. What inspired you to run for mayor in Portland? And I'm very ignorant. This is the first time we've met.
Mm-hmm.
And what inspired you to run for mayor?
Well, you've got 60 minutes and you're going to be a Keith Wilson expert at that point. So, Ms. Duke, it's a pleasure. Thank you to KBOO, to the listeners. This is a great honor. So, everybody, let me just start with an introduction. My name is Keith Wilson. I'm running for mayor, and my main focus is to deliver real change to Portland. And what inspired me is that we can't accept the leadership failures we've been experiencing that really got us into this mess is where our city is right now. We're struggling mightily. And what really drove me was, I'd say about 4 or 5 years ago, I would be traveling through Portland on my way to work, and I didn't recognize my city any longer. And it's not the city that I grew up in. And I would ask everybody, you know, is it the city you grew up in? Or if you moved here, is it the city you moved to? And the answer would be no.
Yeah, but people in Portland have different experiences.
That's right.
Because of gentrification, Portland is not the city that I grew up in.
That's right.
Because of policies like the city that helped divide. Mm-hmm. I remember a time in Portland when African-American family in inner northeast Portland couldn't get a mortgage to refinance their home to, you know, increase the value of it. And then you have those same homes now worth $500,000 and close to $1 million.
Yeah.
It depends on who you are, how Portland looks.
You know, when you say that, it's really interesting. So I grew up in deep north Portland. So we are in the poorest zip code in Portland. I grew up next to the Columbia Villa.
Okay, so you grew up in North Portland.
I know when you say gentrification and displacement, mm-hmm. I lived it every day. We grew up poor. There was seven of us in a 900 square foot home. You know, mom was an Avon lady. Dad delivered luggage, lost luggage from the airport. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they struggled. My father nor my brothers graduated from high school. So when you think about opportunities, those that had and those that had not, I certainly understand and can sympathize to some degree with you, Lenita. Your personal experiences are certainly different than mine. But going back to your question, why am I running? You know, one of the moments that just was an epiphany is in North Portland, you know, it's one of the poorer communities. And Roosevelt was one of the more disadvantaged high schools. And then I started running into high school classmates living in tents and on the street. And I thought, holy cow. You know, my business is growing, but my city was really not. It was failing before my eyes. And then I started seeing the manifestation in that in my friends that I'm meeting in parks, living in tents. And so I really started changing my perspective and started researching, you know, why and how did we get to this place we are today? And started researching challenges, root cause. I have arguably one of the most advanced transportation companies in the nation. So I do a lot of bottleneck review and systems analysis. And I started finding that one of the main root causes of why our city has changed so much is the unsheltered rate has reached a point where we now have the highest unsheltered rate in the nation.
And your campaign is pretty ambitious.
Yes.
According to you, you want to end unsheltered homelessness within a year of being elected.
Yeah.
That's pretty revolutionary.
Yeah. You know, it's not based on hope. It's based on research. So I researched and I've been traveling around the nation working with mayors and county officials and federal officials. President Obama's Assistant Secretary to Reduce Homelessness is on my team. The mayor of Boise, who ended unsheltered homelessness, is on my team, and a host of others. And with their help, we've done the research. We've gathered a national team, and it's backed up with executive directors from some of our city's largest homeless service providers. We started opening shelters so we could test, find out the costing, and we created a roadmap. And then with my executive experience, I've got the ability to successfully see the project through. And I founded a nonprofit called Shelter Portland. And that's the kind of central location where we allow all of our information, our research, our visits to be a repository. And then I always want people to go to that and look at the research tab. You will see a clearly delineated budget on the costs we came up with, the flow of individuals that we need, how many beds should we provide, and then an overall cost to end unsheltered homelessness. So,
that's fine. You've done your homework.
Yep.
I appreciate how you're able to articulate the issue, but the issue in Portland is not so much that they're bad ideas. The issue is that the city and the county, they don't appear to be working hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're looking at that relationship, the city used to be responsible for nighttime emergency shelters. And we then in 2016 signed an agreement for a new department or new entity housed at county called the Joint Office of Homeless Services.
Correct.
Lenita, if you've been in Portland, you know we never experienced unsheltered homelessness like this. One of the first things the Joint Office did was begin converting, closing, or defunding all of our nighttime shelters. And let me explain to you how this looks. In Boise tonight, they have 115 people living unsheltered, 115. In Boston, they have 119. In Philadelphia, they have 788 people living unsheltered in a city twice the size of Portland. In Portland, Lenita, we have 5,394. Now, when you start breaking down, what do they know that we don't? And we found out that they mostly, in some cases, only use nighttime emergency shelters. We closed every single one of our nighttime shelters. So this proposal, this ambitious plan, is just simply to reopen a network of nighttime shelters we used to have. Mm-hmm. And they cost a tenth of what a normal shelter costs, a tenth. So let me give you two numbers, and then I'll let you kind of drill down and start asking those very difficult questions. Portland this year is going to spend $300 million on the costs of having people unsheltered on the street. $300 million on our line item budget. Sweeps, $26 million. Mm-hmm. Our new Portland Solutions Department, 1 year old, $67 million. Police and firefighter overtime this year is $50 million. Boulders on the side of the road that don't help anybody. To end unsheltered homelessness, setting up our network of nighttime shelters in the number that we need is $25 million. So to repeat, it's a tenth of the cost our city is spending on associated cost to unsheltered homelessness. So not only do we care for all Portland, we need to value all Portlanders, but by valuing all Portlanders, we actually save a tremendous amount of expenses on our lineup. And we get to start addressing our crumbling roads and the things that our bus drivers want, just a clean, safe route, or a family who wants a safe route to school for their kiddos, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that baseline we get to by just simply adding back nighttime shelters.
Now, let me revisit my main point.
Yes.
What you're saying sounds lovely, and you've done your accounting homework. You got a number. The people that run the joint office, they have these same numbers.
Yes.
The Multnomah County commissioners, they have the same numbers. And yet when someone calls 211 looking for a shelter, they're either on a wait list or that shelter is full. We have a navigation center.
Yeah.
We have a number of other shelters. We even have a family shelter, but it's all full.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have tents and RVs on, you know, people's right in front of their homes.
Right. When we closed those nighttime shelters, we took all that resource away, and it made we made it very difficult for a 211 operator. When you call 211 right now, they don't have any resources.
None. You're right, they don't.
And so, resources. That's the problem. So now we solve that problem. And because we don't have resources, we have to allow people to sleep on the street in tents, in cars, in makeshift shelters, in RVs. 10 years ago, we never had people on the street. Because we had ample shelter, our officers enforced our community safety laws. You weren't allowed to sleep in a business or a shopkeeper's doorway. You weren't allowed to be in a tent. You weren't allowed to be in an RV.
But and you remember the time when there were Sherry's. Remember they would drive all around downtown?
Sherry's.
It was ran through Central City Concern.
Oh, you mean Cheers.
Cheers. Is that what it was called?
That's
called
right. Cheers. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they would pick people up and take them.
For care.
It was
often when you were inebriated. Cheers, but that was really, yes, we closed our sobering center too, Lady.
So you have all these great ideas. Again, mm-hmm. The money for social service in Portland and Multnomah County is coming from Multnomah County.
That's right.
How are you going to get them to spend this $25 million
within
1 year? Do you have the hookups with the county?
I certainly do.
Do you know
people
in the county? Do you have the power to create all of this?
You know, I sat down and I had breakfast with the chair. It's probably 4 months ago, and we went through the budget. Mm-hmm. And she said something really amazing. She said, Keith, nobody comes to me with solutions. They only come to me with problems. So, Lenita, if you go to shelterportland.org, you're going to see solutions. And what I've provided to chair and with the county officials is a roadmap on how to do it. But I also want to go back to this. The city is underwater. We are looking at budget cuts next year. If we're spending $300 million and we could save that by spending 25, the return on that investment saves us hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, yes, talking to county, we have to talk about a change in philosophy, but the overall point I'd like to make is that if we have 5,000 Portlanders living on the street, those are Portlanders, and they are in unsafe situations. It's dangerous, and if you're a woman in a tent, God forbid. But I also want to make this point out. As the mayor, I'm in charge of public safety. I know that of those 5,000, 400 of them are most likely going to die. As mayor, I'm responsible to ensure that Portlanders and all Portlanders are valued, like I mentioned earlier. So I can't push off my responsibility to county and say, I wish you would fix this. I'm the mayor of Portland. Portlanders want their neighbors cared for, but they also want to make sure that when they're walking down the street, there's not a tent, that there's not somebody passed out, or there's not a drug deal going on in a tent that's heavily armed in some cases.
Would you abolish the joint office?
You know, I would work with the joint office, but it's all based on having defined expectations for the joint office. I've already begun talking to them about funding this program. But again, this program's going to get stood up really because it's cost savings and we need to care for Portlanders. The joint office, whether or not we continue to fund the joint office, is a clear discussion we have with key performance indicators that are clearly defined. But my key performance indicator that I want everybody to know, it's do we or do we not have unsheltered on the street? It should be as close to zero. Now I know it's going to have to be 300 or 400. A lot of individuals will not want to come into a shelter. Right, right. But at least with 80 outreach workers, Lenita, we have a fighting chance to reach those 400 people that are insisting on living on the street. But if you're on the street, you're not going to be in a tent, in an RV, or sleeping in a shopkeeper's doorway, because those are our community codes. You can't use a shopkeeper's doorway as a bedroom or a bathroom. It just, in no city in the nation will you find that. So we get back to that basis of caring for people, and it's lower cost than the alternative, which is...
Okay, yeah. Let me ask you, go ahead. Interrupt you. Now, I understand when you're talking about nighttime shelters, mm-hmm. but where are the nighttime shelters? The places, I know they just opened up a new shelter in North Portland.
Yep.
District 2.
Yeah, Arbor Lodge.
Right, and they built it. They haven't opened it. Let me correct myself.
Lenita, that's my biggest concern.
Yeah, where are you going to put these nighttime shelters at?
I use churches and community centers. So I've been working and partnering. So United Gospel Mission is the operator. Church of Nazarene at I-205
and
Powell.
Right, and those are emergency shelters the weather gets bad.
But why are we only caring for people when they're in life-saving situations? My point is if we're able to set up 800 beds in 72 hours because we know a storm is coming, wait a second. A woman sleeping in a tent at midnight is a safety issue.
I know a storm is coming every night for some
of our
residents.
And I want you to change that perspective that when we have shopkeepers leaving Portland, we lost over 20,000 residents in this last 5 years because people are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired of paying high taxes without getting the value of Portland livability. Mm-hmm. We've compromised that. So now we get that back by flipping the script, by caring for everybody 365 instead of just when it's cold out or hot out.
Good point. You're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Lenita Duke, and we're speaking with the candidate for mayor, Keith Wilson. Again, you can join the conversation by calling our air room at 503-231-8187, or you can message us at the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Did I say that right, Althea? Okay. And Althea is our news director. Let's get back to our discussion. We've talked a lot about homelessness,
right. Houselessness.
Let's move on to another topic. Now, I'm so glad that you're from North Portland. I'm currently in North Portland as well.
Go St. John's. Go NOPO.
Yeah. So let's look at question 11. And in all fairness, we give all, I give all
Holy
the candidates.
Holy cow, you've got a bunch of questions here, don't you?
Okay. Yeah. So I live in District 2, and among the pressing issues is the proposed bottle drop location where there was once a dollar store off of North Lombard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one in that community wants a bottle drop store because of safety issues. So my question is, as mayor, how would you deal with this issue where you have the community members saying, no, we don't want this, yet at the same time, there's a need for a service like a bottle drop?
Right. Yeah.
How would you balance that?
Well, let's just talk about that North Portland bottle drop first. First of all, the land was acquired, and we really were unaware that the bottle drop was going to be brought in. So it almost looked as if it was going to be a foregone conclusion. Then the neighbors learned about it, and they voted unanimously against it. So nothing about us without us, first and foremost. And so at this point, we're going to find a different or an alternative to the bottle drop. I agree with you. We need to do something, but I want to talk about North Portland. I've grown up in North Portland, and I've known North Portland for really decades. North Portland's always been the one who's received the railways and the highways and the Superfund sites and the garbage dumps and the salvage yards and the heavy-duty maintenance and manufacturing. We've always been that repository for Portland.
And the inferior Portland public school education, let's not leave that out.
Yeah, and then look at what's going on just this year alone. Pier Park, the maintenance on the pool has been compromised. Our kiddos did not get a park. Now we don't have a pool at
now
Columbia Park. Do you
correct.
See that if we continue to do this four-corner approach where only certain corners of the city get funding and others get the bottle drops. Do you see how it harms the overall four-corner psychology of the city?
Right. We have two Portlands, one for the well-off and then one for those that are struggling.
So coming from North Portland, I can see that. And I see this going on in East Portland now. We've underinvested in East Portland. So it's not just North Portland. It's we have to invest and we have to bring back our urban core, which is our downtown. We have to have that urban core. But we can't do it at the expense of the other four corners of our city. So going back to your question regarding bottle drop, at this point, we need to pull back and rethink. We need to be intentional. We need to get the community involved, get everybody at the table, and find the right location for it. But putting it right on Lombard when we're already struggling and storefronts are closing and we're trying to revive that community, we're investing in the wrong things. And so let's get back to investing in the right things. A vibrant downtown St. John's core. But now I want you to say, from a cookie cutter standpoint, we need that in every one of our town squares throughout Portland.
Well, you know, you talk what you're saying, beautiful words, but the implementation, how are we going to do this? And as we think about this and move on to other questions, I just want to remind you, you're listening to Running on Air. We're going to take a quick break, look at a few new questions, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Keith Wilson. He's running for mayor. And we got a question. I guess we were talking about North Portland.
That's right.
Right?
Seems like that's where we're going.
And Jeff from North Portland asked, what are we going to do about the tank farms in the Northwest? Now, I don't know what tank farms are. Maybe you can educate me.
Yeah. So Jeff has hit on a very important issue in Portland. Our city planners 100 years ago started putting all of our fuel storage along the Willamette River. I mean, it's amazing how disconnected our river city is from the river. And we have about 600 tanks, and they store about 80 to 90% of all the fuels we use in this general area, including most of Oregon. So the Olympic Pipeline comes in from the Puget Sound, and it carries our fuel from the refineries up north, and then we store it at these tanks. And the problem with those 600 tanks is a lot of them have been decommissioned, but just because they're empty doesn't mean that their risk is mitigated. But the problem I think Jeff is really focusing on is if we have a Cascadia earthquake event, that fluid has a high risk of flowing into the water, and not only the resultant fires, but the destruction could really have an environmental crisis, which I understand is at par with the Exxon Valdez and the Deepwater Horizon, that those two events would be similar to what would happen in Portland. And so the concern is, okay, we know that that's a potential and we're well past a Cascadia earthquake. So what do we do to mitigate that? And to Jeff's point, I can speak to this personally. So Titan, the company I own and operate, I have a three-state transportation carrier. We use diesel fuel. So we have to reduce fossil fuels rapidly. So at my company, we don't use a single gallon of fossil fuels in my Portland fleet. We do use renewable diesel, and it has a 80% reduced emissions benefit. However, it's still a diesel. It's not nearly as toxic as petroleum diesel. So that's one way. We switch out and we use a better and a safer chemical because renewable diesel doesn't have a aquatic effect with fish. However, we need to just reduce using diesel altogether. I converted a portion of my Portland fleet to electric, so we don't even use fluids coming out of the critical energy infrastructure. Now he's talking about the tanks. We need to start focusing on moving those tanks because we have them against our waterway. We shouldn't have them up against our waterway. We need to reclaim the water for Portlanders because we're a river city. So we need to start decommissioning those tanks. We need to start working with the owners to insure them, first of all, to make sure we have full mitigation risk. And then we need to start decommissioning. And then any new infrastructure, we have to start moving away from that facility. So it's a stepped process. First of all, reduce the use of fossil fuel, just stop and or use different sources, mitigate, start closing, removing, and then start removing those altogether and no longer utilize that. It's a generational change, but you got to start somewhere.
Well, you know, I noticed in some of your campaign literature, and you can also go to your website, Keith Wilson for Mayor, you have a whole platform devoted to climate change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, let's move on. And thank you, Jeff, for that wonderful question. I wanted to ask you, what do you think is an issue facing Portland that is not getting enough attention? An issue you've not addressed in your website.
You know, I don't want to bring up something that isn't pressing. So you hit it on the head, and we talked about it a lot, about ending unsheltered homelessness. We have to do that because when you look at public safety, let's just talk about public safety. If you called for a police officer 10 years ago, they showed up in 6 minutes for a priority one call, Ms. Duke. Today, if you call and your loved one is in harm's way, they're going to show up in 24 minutes. It's four times longer. And so I looked at, well, what are they, what's their primary use or what are they spending their time on? Over 50% of their arrest time are the unsheltered. Mm-hmm. So that's, you see why we have to end unsheltered? Because if we can reduce their arrest rate, because I know just basic nighttime shelter drops their arrest rate to 2%, only 2% of their arrest rates if you're living in shelter, it can improve public safety for everybody immediately. That's why that's so important. And then we get to really start focusing on improving livability.
Now, it's funny you brought up the police, because running for mayor, and again, this is, you're running for mayor, Keith Wilson's running for mayor, and the mayor is responsible for the police bureau. How can you make the police responsive to the community while addressing the core reason for crime? Now, if you call the police, you'll be treated radically different from if I call the police, mm-hmm. or if any of my male relatives call the police or get the police called on them.
And you're talking because you're a person of color.
I'm a person
and
of color.
You're right. And I don't deny that. We have to continue to train and train and train and be intentional about training. Your question about working with the police chief and how do we make the police more responsive? I'll go back to that answer. When our police are spending over 50% of their time only arresting poor people, homeless people, mm-hmm. we're misusing our police. We should be providing that care. And we have to value all Portlanders. And we can't just continue to arrest those that are homeless, because when you arrest someone who's homeless, you're just keeping them homeless. Mm-hmm. Let's just be clear. Now, the way we help the police, and as the mayor, the police chief reports to me, we got to get back to community policing. They have to be back in the community and working with the community. When was the last time you saw a police officer at a donut shop? They're so overwhelmed and their overtime is at historic levels. Who would ever thought we'd want to see a police officer at a donut shop? I want to see them back there because it means they're back in the community, connecting with the community. And now I want to tell you this. This is new information. The arrest rate for property crime in Portland is 5% now. One of the worst in the nation. We are shoulder to shoulder with Oakland and St. Louis. It's open season out there. We want our police to be unencumbered. We want to care for our unsheltered and unsheltered homelessness. Allow our police officers to get back to community policing, to responding at 6.